Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG. We're online at kpcg.fm. Live link here at thetrumpet.com as well on today's edition of Trumpet Radio Live. Record cold covers much of the U.S. I hope you're warm today. We're doing our best here. Violence in Chicago set to smash records. And Aleppo under attack as Syrian war rages. That and other news and stories coming up on this Tuesday edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live. We're at 101.3 KPCG, and we're online at kpcg.fm. We have a live link at thetrumpet.com as well. And you can follow us on Twitter at kpcgfm. If you'd like to send us any comments or questions or suggestions or poems or haikus, which is a type of poem, you can send those to comments at kpcg.fm. I never liked the haiku. It's too restrictive. I'm a more of a free flow type of individual. I'm Dwight Falk and Grant Turgeon here today as well. How you doing?
Great.
Good. Good to see you.
Thank you.
The U.S. is dealing with the polar plunge, as they call it. And in this case, they're not referring to people jumping into the water when it's freezing.
Oh, okay.
I think. it could happen. But it's the coldest air of the season so far. Across the United States, 76 locations have shattered their daily record for the cold high temperatures for December since the beginning of the month. So it's some record-breaking temperatures. It's better, I guess, to break the low for the high than the low for the low.
Right.
If that makes sense. You know, in other words, if the low, the previous high low was 30, you only got up to 28 that day. Mm-hmm. So you broke the record. So I'd rather have that one than have it be, you know.
Negative 60?
Yeah. We're in Abraham Blondeau country when you're talking negative 60s. But it has been a cold December. They say the bad news is that it's going to get even colder for the rest of the week. Below freezing temperatures are expected for 7% of the country. In fact, most of the country will see the coldest air since last winter. Where have you been, cold air? Well, now you're back. This week's dangerous cold, they say, will sweep the country from Bismarck to Boston, with negative 10 to negative 35 degree wind chills expected. That's according to CNN meteorologist Rachel Azen. She says at negative 35 degrees, wind chill takes only 10 minutes for frostbite to occur. So if it's that cold and you've got that wind chill and you're out there for 10 minutes, you're going to have some frostbite. Of course, if you had exposed skin, I guess.
Right. Wow. So is it just sweeping the north if it's from Bismarck to Boston? Do they literally mean it's up that high in the country?
I think some of the coldest is, but okay. It's dipping down somewhat. We've got cold temps here. It's not anywhere near that, but it's frosty. Was your windshield frosty this morning?
It was, but today was the first day I was able to put on a robe and go outside and start it up before I was even ready.
We got to take a picture of that and tweet it. You out there in your robe.
Barefoot, too. I just didn't want to go out there with no clothes on.
That's always a good thing. Yeah, I haven't had to do anything that drastic, but a lot of times my cat's out at night, and then he comes and bothers me, wants to come in. And so I'll go out there and let him in, and I go out into the garage and then open the door, and I get a nice blast of cold air doing that. So hopefully my neighbor, I mean, it's the middle of the night. Hopefully my neighbor's not looking at me in my shorts there.
Right.
And barefoot and calling my cat's name.
It's been under 20 for a week or so now, at least for parts of most of these days. And I don't even notice it anymore. It's like already completely acclimated, I guess.
You have a special talent to acclimate to any temperature.
That's true. Quickly. Yeah. At least early last week, I noticed that it was colder than usual, but now I don't even feel it at all. It's weird.
I had to have an interesting conversation with my son this morning on the way to school. He's always forgetting, in quotes, his gloves or his hat or something. And I said, look, let's just be honest. What's going on here? I said, you just don't want to wear them? Why don't you want to wear them? And finally, he's like, well, if you bundle up too much, everybody makes fun of you. I'm like, I get it. You're not the first person that's been 11 years old. You don't want to overbundle. I got it. But you got to dress somewhat for the weather. I said, you can't go to school in a tank top and shorts. You got to put on something. I'm not saying you got to wear a snowsuit, but
there's a few kids there who are, they're scrawny, but they're out there in their white polo shirt and their blue pants, and that's it. They're not wearing any coat or anything.
Got to put the coats on. And I get it. When I was that age, I don't know why, but for some reason, it was the same sort of thing. We had a lot of snow in Wisconsin, and you couldn't go out for recess unless you had boots. But we didn't want to wear the big boots. So we always tried to find some sort of, like, hiking boot and convince the teacher, like, no, these are boots. And it was a thing. So I get it. And now as an adult, I'm like, I don't care, you know. Yeah. But as a kid, it's a big deal.
Yeah, now usually people will not voice their concerns if they see you wearing something that seems a little bit goofy.
Yeah.
But as kids, that's the first thing they'll say. You look stupid.
You're overbundled, sir. I hoped no one would notice, but yes, I am overbundled. So nowadays, I just try to stay warm. That's my main concern. Chicago's had a really violent year, and it looks like it's going to be a record-breaking year. Chicago tops 700 homicides for the year. There have been 701 homicides recorded so far this year in the city, according to the Chicago Police Department. There were 480 homicides in 2015, to give you a little perspective. It's the first time the city has recorded more than 700 homicides in nearly two decades, according to the Chicago Tribune. Chicago had 704 homicides in 1998. That's the record. But they're at 701 now, and we still have, what, a couple of weekends left in the year. So chances are they're going to break that record, and it's a bad one.
That is really bad. I don't know if you've ever read that article from the Milwaukee Bucks, Jabari Parker, but he basically described growing up in Chicago and how sometimes he would be walking back from the gas station. He was just getting a snack down the road from his house, and there'd be a drive-by, and he'd just have to get face down on the sidewalk out of nowhere. And yet, in the same article, he's kind of voicing some anti-police sentiment, which is really strange, especially when you're living in a war zone like that, and the police are the people who are going to save you from those drive-by shootings and from all the gang violence there.
Yeah, I suppose there might be some negative feelings towards the officers because they might hassle them at times. You know, I'm sure there are times when they're like, I'm not doing anything, and they're getting hassled, or they feel they are. But they have to see the other side of it, too, where it's a war zone. And even this write-up here from CNN about the record number of homicides this year points out that a lot of them are same sort of situations. They're bystanders. They may not even be involved, but they just got shot because they happen to be out on the street or something. So really a difficult situation there. And this year, so far, there have been 3,315 shooting incidents. Officers have recovered 8,000 guns. That's a 20% jump over last year. And gun arrests are up 8% over last year. They make the comment in the article that this is all because of guns. And the guns didn't get hooked on drugs. The guns didn't walk down the street and shoot somebody. The people did. Mm-hmm. Fair enough. You have weapons. It's obviously probably not a great situation. And if they didn't have the guns, the number of deaths might come down, but there's still going to be the activity going on. And, you know, they're trying to look for solutions, but the solution isn't just the gun issue. It is the people issue. And that's a much harder one to solve than the guns. And even here, you know, it's not like, if you're involved in drugs or you're involved in gang activity, you're going to legally obtain a firearm anyway. So,
yeah, that's the problem there. A lot of those people have illegal weapons, and maybe that's something to look at. But, yeah, the law, the law-abiding citizens would not be affected by proactive policing. They're not going to have drugs or guns in their pockets. And so if you're a law-abiding citizen, you happen to be hanging around somewhere you shouldn't be, and you look somewhat suspicious to a police officer, if you have nothing to hide, that's really not too much of an issue for you. But if you do, then really that could save lives. Police officers save lives when they catch someone before they commit the big crime. If they catch someone with some cocaine in his pocket, then that might stop a shooting.
Yeah. I saw a story last night on the news here in Oklahoma City about a new drug that's out on the streets. And it's an ongoing battle for the officers, or for the drug task forces. You know, as soon as they think they kind of understand what's going on out there, something else pops up. And it's a new kind of, I don't know, chemical substance, obviously, a drug of some kind that they're creating with different chemicals. And it's, I think they said, 100 to 1,000 times stronger than some of the drugs that are out there. It's that same sort of drug that killed Prince. I can't remember the technical name for it. There's all kinds of code names, but there's...
Yeah.
It has
PCP, ecstasy?
This new one, they just call it pink because they're pink tablets.
Okay.
And they look like anything. I mean, they look like an aspirin. You don't even know what it is.
Oh.
But they're that potent. And it's all sort of this, the painkiller, but just hyped to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
And as powerful as that stuff is, now you have something come along that's 100 to 1,000 times stronger, and it's not even illegal.
Mm-hmm.
Because they haven't been able to make the law yet to say that it's illegal. So it's out there, and they say the people that are chasing it are, you know, like the heroin addicts and so forth, because they need something more powerful to give them their kick. And so it's a losing battle for the drug enforcement officers, you know, as soon as, not that they got a hold of the other things, but once they feel like maybe they kind of know what's going on, something new comes along. And they said there's going to be, you know, probably a mad rush for people to go get these things because they're not even technically illegal yet.
It reminds me of a virus and how every time we develop a prescription drug to combat a virus, the virus builds up antibodies and an immunity to the prescription drug. It adapts and it attacks the body in a different way. It's kind of just like what we're seeing now where, yeah, technically these pills are not illegal yet, but they're even worse than the drugs that are already out there. So it's like they're continually adapting their habits to try and skirt the law.
Yeah, and there's another write-up today about some guy. He's apparently, by day, he's a hip-hop music producer. By night, he's some sort of a big drug runner, and they caught him. But he'd been involved in robberies from pharmacies. Now they're going in and stealing the pharmaceuticals and then mixing up their whatever flavor they're making of things and trying to sell it and make their money that way. So it's a terrible, terrible thing, and it's really strange. You know, you see a report like that on the news, like I saw last night, and I had my kids sitting there, we're watching the news, you know, and they're asking me questions, you know, what does that mean, or what is that, or why would they do that? And, you know, you're trying to explain to them that, yeah, people get caught up in that sort of thing, and it destroys their lives, and, you know, one time, you get involved in that one time, and you can't come back from that in most cases, or it's the rest of your life battling it. So, you know, you do feel for people that are caught up in it, but, again, it's just a terrible situation once they get involved. They're a lot of times hooked for life or dead.
Yeah, and is there a connection between the hip-hop music and him running drugs at night? I mean, obviously that kind of music often glorifies drug abuse. A lot of people who get addicted to drugs love that kind of music, and they think that it's cool. So they think, maybe I'll just try it one time and see what it's like, and then they're hooked forever. And that's just a terrible way to go. I mean, pretty much people kill themselves from drug abuse every day, and you think you can control it, but you really can't.
Yeah, it is really kind of ingrained into the culture of some of that music and things. And so people that like that type of music, oftentimes they bristle if somebody says it's not the best. You know, they say, you don't understand the culture or whatever. Well, what is the culture, though? It's It's a lot of that stuff, isn't it? It glorifies a lot of that terrible stuff.
Does classical music, does folk music encourage the same things? Does it have lyrics that say that it's cool to hate the police and to abuse drugs?
Yeah. Yeah, you have to consider the message in a lot of those things. Of course, the law enforcement's always trying to combat criminals and criminal activity. And there was a movie years ago, I forget what it was called, Minority Report, I think, right, where they were trying to predict who would commit the crime and then, you know, arrest them or something before it happened. Well, they're almost kind of getting there. This is from the times.co.uk. They say 3-year-olds can be identified as criminals of the future, which I doubt, but... I mean, you could look at somebody, I would think, and say, well, what the environment they're in could certainly tell you some stories there.
Or you could see a kid throwing a tantrum in a store and say, that little hellion. But it doesn't mean necessarily he's going to grow up and be a crime lord.
Yeah, hopefully not. They say a fifth of the population is responsible for 4/5 of crime, 2/5 of obesity, 3/4 of fatherless families, and for claiming 2/3 of benefits. What's more, scientists say you can identify this troublesome group at the age of 3. It's interesting that they wrote that, actually, because in a lot of cases, people promote a fatherless family. But here they're saying it's a troublesome group, so good for them, because it is often troublesome. Exactly. Sometimes it happens, and that's not through anyone's fault, but sometimes it's through some inappropriate behavior.
Well, it sounds like just about all of those different problems would get back to the family, even if they only acknowledge it partially.
Yeah. They say a 45-minute test rating children on IQ and self-control, combined with information about deprivation and maltreatment, allowed researchers to predict, they say, with considerable accuracy, which would go on to be the greatest burden on the state. Can you imagine getting the test results back as a 3-year-old? You're going to be probably a burden on the state. So anyway, hope it works out for you. The 38-year study may be useful in designing ways to help such children before it's too late. It's a 38-year study. I'm 38 years old. Maybe they've been studying me. It's too late, man. So I don't know. It's interesting. I suppose they could get some trends, but you don't know what somebody's going to do. That gets pretty dangerous if you think you know exactly what somebody's going to do. You can look at it and say, yeah, there might be some problems here in the future, but people make all kinds of decisions. Sometimes people come from really bad situations and they make great things of their lives, and sometimes the reverse happens. So it's hard to – they're kind of trying to play like they know everything or they can predict everything, and that's pretty dangerous. What would they do with this information, you know?
Well, it seems like they could manipulate the results to try and silence groups that they don't like, for example. Maybe lock up different people who they think could be a threat but really just disagree with the people in charge.
I was going to say they're kind of taking on like a godlike prerogative, but even God doesn't do that. No, he doesn't choose to know what people will do.
And the thing is, he could know if he wanted to, and he purposely doesn't, so that we have a chance to really change that.
Yeah, he says, I mean, there's all sorts of prophecies in the Bible that say, you know, if you will turn or if you will repent. He gives people chances. We all have chances to turn things around. So, but they want to kind of figure it out. I know in school it's interesting. They, they will put kids in certain kind of tracks, like, okay, this kid seems a little brighter, we're going to put him on this accelerated track, this kid's not doing as well. And I think that can be okay, but I think sometimes it also just kind of pigeonholes somebody to where it's hard to get out of that track once you're on it. You know, I know that in school, they broke our class up into, I think, based upon reading skills. And so some kids got put in the advanced, some kids got put in the slower reading. I'm telling the story because I was in the advanced one. If I was in the other one, I wouldn't tell you the story. They put us in the advanced one. So we always got to kind of go with the older group. We got to go, like, there'd be a few of us in, say, third grade, and we'd be mostly with the fourth graders. They'd keep pushing us that way. And I don't know how it all ended up at the end of the day. You know, if the kids in the other group ever felt like, you know, they kind of caught up. But they were kind of slowed down. But they were always in that track. And I don't know if they couldn't break out of it or if it was just like, well, you're told so often you can't do something, or you're kind of treated that way that you don't reach your full potential. I'm not sure how that works, but like with this sort of a testing, if you have this idea that this kid's going to be a criminal and you treat him that way, yeah, he probably will end up being a criminal.
It's a great point. And conversely, those who are put on the fast track and are accelerated in their learning and told that they are bright and have a pretty good future ahead of them often end up fulfilling the prophecy, basically.
Yeah, there's that expression, something to the effect of treat somebody, you know, how you want them to be, not how they are.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of like, you know, you want them to be a great leader, treat them that way, mm-hmm. and they'll reach it. So there's probably some truth to that. Or you run into the bitter reality that it's not going to happen for you. You told me all these years I was special. I guess it can go both ways. You can get a big head, too, sometimes.
Those who get told they're special might not try as much.
Right.
So really there are pitfalls either way. There has to be a steady medium in there where maybe we just treat all the kids the right way, if there is a right way, instead of saying you're bad or you're good.
Yeah, you're a kid.
Yeah.
You have some good things, you got some bad things, you're good at some stuff, you're not good at some stuff, just like the guy next to you.
Honesty.
Just
yeah.
Deal with it. You're a human. You're going to have your up days and your down days. This is an interesting story from, I guess just this last day or two. It says, Obama on Comedy Central, America by no means has overcome legacies of slavery, Jim Crow, colonialism, racism. So this is kind of beating the drum on this topic a little bit. It says he was appearing on The Daily Show, which I don't like it when politicians appear on these, you know, they talk about fake news. Well, The Daily Show is fake news.
Yeah.
Now, they don't pretend to not be, but then they start taking themselves seriously.
And there are so many people who actually give more credibility to those shows than they do to credible news outlets. That's what the problem is.
Right. I think I saw some stats a couple years ago that most younger people were getting their news from The Daily Show when Jon Stewart was doing it, as opposed to actual, well, more mainstream sources. So that tells you something about their opinions. But he was appearing on The Daily Show. Obama was asked about how he speaks to crowds about race. They asked how he skirts the line between speaking your mind and sharing your true opinions on race, while at the same time not being seen to alienate some of the people you are talking to. And that was what the host, Trevor Noah, asked him. Trevor Noah, I believe, is from South Africa originally. He's same as President Obama in the sense of being mixed. I think he's about half white, half black, something mm-hmm. like that. So they have a similar background there. And so here's what the president said. He said, you know, my general theory is that if I was clear in my own mind about who I was, comfortable in my own skin, and had clarity about the way in which race continues to be this powerful factor in so many elements of our lives. So that's a sentence with words. It's just a lot of talk. It doesn't.
I thought there was going to be a conclusion at some point there.
There wasn't. That was it. And then he continues. He says, but that is not the only factor in so many aspects of our lives that we have. By no means, he says, sorry, that we have by no means overcome the legacies of slavery and Jim Crow and colonialism and racism, but that the progress we've made has been real and extraordinary. If I'm communicating my genuine belief that those who are not subject to racism can sometimes have blind spots or lack of appreciation of what it feels to be on the receiving end of that, but that doesn't mean that they're not open to learning and caring about equality and justice, and that I can win them over because there is goodness in the majority of people. So that's a lot of words. And it sounds okay. I mean, he hit the buzzwords, you know, slavery, Jim Crow, colonialism, racism. And I guess, say, my issue with it would be, first of all, I don't like politicians on these shows. I don't think it's mixing reality and fantasy. Maybe it's all fantasy. I don't know. And I don't like the fact that they have to keep going back to the subject. It seems like it doesn't help to do that. But I guess my biggest issue with the comments is that he has made himself out to be the judge and the jury about racism. He knows. He is judging it. And he is saying, well, We've made some strides, but we haven't overcome it yet. And if you have an experience that you don't know what it's like, so he's judging who has experienced it, who hasn't, what it is, and is he the ultimate authority on when it's okay finally, when things are better? That's the issue that I have, because they kind of look to him as like the official word on it, and he's just a person. But he throws out these comments sort of like he's God or something, you know, like, well, we still haven't overcome the problem. And what is going to overcome the problem? Like, what has to happen for him to say it's over with? And what difference does it make if he thinks it's over or not? That's the issue that I have with it. He sets himself up sort of as the ultimate authority, and he's not.
There certainly is a lot of arrogance in those comments, especially when you take into account the things he's said the past 8 years about white people in general, how racism is in our DNA. And then very recently, within the last couple of weeks, I believe he said that Southern whites are more racist than Northern whites. So he's saying, all of you guys are racist because it's in your DNA, but especially you Southern whites, as if he's still thinking of a time back in the mid-1900s. I mean, it's or the mid-1800s, really.
And then throwing the comment in there about, well, you have a blind spot to it. You know, you're probably a good person, but you just don't know that you're racist.
What about all of the people who I've seen, the black people I've seen, who have said they've never experienced racism in their entire lives? If this was such an oppressive country, every single black person, every single minority would have plenty of stories on hand.
I think there is a lot of difficulty in certain communities, and it's because of the structure of the community that I think most of the problems exist. You know, I mean, I get it. If you're living in a bad situation, if you're in a bad neighborhood in Chicago and you see somebody else, different race, presumably, and they appear to have it better than you, it's very easy to say, yeah, it's a racist sort of thing.
But how many whites are there who live in a beaten up, run down trailer park surrounded by drug addicts? I mean, there are plenty of people of all races who grow up in all different kinds of environments. The thing is, what's different about this country is every single person has a way out of those situations. If you pay attention in school and you work really hard, you can be a millionaire in this country. And that's not true in anywhere else.
Yeah, we really have an opportunity to reap what we sow. And that can be good and that can be bad. If historically, and even today, most cultures and societies, you're kind of born into a certain situation and you can't get out of it.
A lot of people of all races are rich as well. And so it goes both ways. So obviously those who are born in a more rich family might have more resources available for them to succeed in life. So it might be a little bit easier at the start, but that's not saying that a poor person couldn't rise up as well.
Yeah, and make something out of their situation. And the thing, too, is that it's this whole argument is kind of being presented about racism as if one side has all the issues and the other side doesn't. I mean, people are people. Everybody's got good and some bad. And so, but they just keep bringing it up and keep talking about it. And not to say that you should just ignore it. If there's an issue, it should be dealt with. But no solutions are offered here. No constructive path is offered here. It's just a blame game.
Mm-hmm.
And people watch this show, and that's the message that they get. And I've never seen him, the president. It may have happened, but I really haven't seen it. I've never seen anybody challenge him on some of the comments. They'll ask him and let him talk, and then say, "Wow, thanks." What about saying, "Okay, hang on a second," and challenge something? They just don't do it. Media doesn't do it typically. These hosts don't do it. I mean, they probably know if you challenge him, he won't come back to your show. He won't get your ratings. I don't know. But, I just think that it's some comments that aren't the best, particularly because, again, he's setting himself up as the judge and jury on the whole topic. I don't know who gave him that power to do that, that authority. Anybody can stand up there and make a bunch of proclamations about things. Doesn't make it right. So,
yeah, millions of people in this country now believe that when the left says equality, what they're really talking about is when the minorities have the true upper hand over all whites, then that's when everything becomes equal. That's what a lot of people are starting to think that means, because that's what people are pushing for. In what way are minorities actively oppressed in this country? It just isn't happening, and yet the myth is pushed constantly. The media and people in charge are constantly telling, especially blacks, but a lot of minorities as well, you know, you need to hold on to these past injustices. Never forget what has been done to you over the past, 50 or 200 years ago, even, because they still need to pay for what they've done. Even though 5% of white people in this country actually come from a slave owning family.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting.
Could you imagine if, the Jews or the Israelites, whenever they were enslaved by the Egyptians thousands of years ago, if they were still just seriously venomous against Egypt to this day, because back then when the Egyptians were really black, pure black, they were enslaving the white Israelites. And so to this day, we're just going to be bitter toward you. We're never going to forget it.
Right. I mean, if people consider themselves Christian, I guess there is a lot about forgiveness in the Bible too. You know, if we want to be forgiven, we have to forgive, even if there is an injustice. And sometimes there's not, but it's very easy to be offended or to try to look for offense. If you look for offense, you can find it. I mean, anybody can. Just drive around for a while.
I mean, even if you want to talk about more recently, the Jews and the Germans in the last century, it seems like those two countries get along really well right now. It's like the Jews have even gone to the other extreme and forgotten a lot of that history, so that they can reconcile with Germany.
Yeah.
We all should try to do that to a certain extent and realize that color, especially today, is meaningless. There are places in the world where slavery still exists, believe it or not, but this is not one of those places. This is not a place where anyone is really oppressed.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to forget history, but you can forgive.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially if you weren't involved in it. You know, I mean, there's a lot of things that have happened over the years that we weren't around for. There's one lady, though, that was around for a lot of stuff. She's from New Jersey. She just became the oldest woman in America, oldest person in America. Adele Dunlap, she just turned 114. And I love this story because she's so old, she just doesn't care about anything anymore. She's in this nursing home, and they had a little, celebration for her. It says, but Dunlap made clear through her facial expressions and her answers to questions that she didn't appreciate the fuss. Asked what she was thankful for, she said, "How should I know?" And asked what her birthday wish was, she responded, "I've never thought of such a thing. I don't wish for anything." And she also declared to everyone that she was only 105, but they say it's her habit to shave about a decade off of her age. What's the difference now?
She just doesn't even care at all.
I'm only 105. What are you guys talking about? She was described as a, quote, passive participant in nursing home activities. They said, "We don't make her move much physically. If she wants to move, she'll move." So
sounds like she's in charge of the place.
Hey, you're 114. You do what you want. Her husband, Earl Dunlap Sr., who worked in insurance, died in 1963. So gives you some idea about the ages here.
That's more than 50 years ago. Unbelievable. Yeah.
Soon after basking in her birthday wishes Monday, Dunlap was looking ahead. Asked what her favorite part of the day is, the 114-year-old said, "I guess just going to bed."
It sounds like she just wants to die.
Yeah, she's like, come on now. To give you some perspective, on the day she was born, December 12th, 1902, here's what was happening. Theodore Roosevelt was president. We've had 26 presidents since then. There were only 45 states in the Union at the time. The U.S. population was approximately 80 million, a quarter of what it is today, and the Wright brothers' famous flight was still 12 months away. You think about all the things she's seen in her life. You know, she's lived through two world wars, Korea, Vietnam, all the Middle East turmoil, 9/11, all these things in her lifetime. Pretty amazing. It's so we don't think about time exactly the same as somebody like she would. You know, you think, you know, you'd meet her and say, "Oh, my husband died," and we'd all think, "Oh, a few years ago." No, 50 years ago, or more. You know, she's old.
That's unbelievable. Yeah, 25 presidents, you said?
Yeah.
That's, I think I've been alive for four, maybe?
26. Yeah.
Wow.
Yes, he's really, really seen a lot, and so pretty neat. But once people get older, they're just like, I just want to go to bed. Leave me alone. She didn't care much for the celebration. Here's one other one that's kind of funny. An overdue library book is returned 120 years later.
Wow.
A woman in the United Kingdom recently returned a book to the library at a school in southwestern England. The only problem, of course, is that the book was more than a century overdue.
Imagine the fees on that one.
Yeah. If the other lady from the story was the worked at the library, she would have been there almost the entire time. I knew that book would come back.
Been waiting for this.
Yeah. I've been waiting. I couldn't die until I got this book back. Alice Gillett found the book, The Microscope and Its Revelations. I don't think anyone was looking for that one. While she was going through her late husband's book collection, she saw the book was borrowed from Hereford Cathedral School. She returned it and was not punished with any late fees. So what would the fee be on something like that?
Oh, well, I mean,
a shekel.
Yeah, it's usually only a few cents a week, I think. So that adds up, though. That's going to be a hefty fine.
You'd have to pay it back in old-time currency, like a wooden nickel.
A pre-inflation, too.
Yeah.
Make sure that you get that kind of a deal.
All in gold. We're going to need a bag of gold bullion to pay for that. So if you've been looking for the microscope and its revelations, it's now there, so you can go back and check it out.
That title was so boring, it didn't even register in my mind the first time you said it.
All you heard was, What was that again? The microscope and its revelations? Yeah, so...
who knows? It could be pretty interesting.
I suppose if you're into science...
Depends on what you're looking at.
Yeah. So anyway, that book came back late. That reminds me of that funny... there was a Seinfeld episode where... they returned a book like 20 years late or something, and the librarian was still like out to get him. It was the same one, you know, and really wanted the punishment to be laid out there. I don't think a lot of people go to libraries. I could be wrong, but that's kind of a sort of a thing of the past, right? You can just Google it. Just ask Google.
Well, what people do is they'll flock to the library for the free internet access, people who don't have computers. So that's kind of what the libraries are doing, is they're just bringing more computers into that computer area. And then if you go into a library now, that's what you see. There's like 30 or 40 people. Never will you see a computer open for your use, because people spend forever on there once they get it. And there's like two people looking through the aisles of the books.
Yeah, they have programs for kids. And sometimes when you have kids, you go to some of those like reading programs. But, you know, I like books and I like to read, but I just go to a bookstore usually, and you can find the book for like a dollar.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, I'll just buy it for a dollar, and then I don't have to worry about it. So I don't know. Maybe the libraries will have to start paying us to take the books.
Oh,
check it out. They give us 50 cents.
Yeah.
If they had like an adult reading program, if you read 10 books, you get a free pizza. You know, I might do that.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
We did that in school.
That was my favorite part of public school. We had a book club, and once a month we would meet to discuss the book we had read. We'd have some pizza, have some soda, some candy. We'd talk about it for about an hour. Our middle school's principal attended every meeting with us.
Wow.
So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, we had Pizza Hut had a, it was called the Book It Club when I was in grade school. And if you read so many books a month, you got a free little pizza, just a little one.
Yeah, Pizza Hut provided our monthly pizzas as well.
Oh, yeah. Well,
personal still, pan pizza.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. They're still doing that. So we used to do that. And then if everybody met the goal, you got a pizza party at the end of the year. We did it once. There's always a couple of slackers. And look, to be honest with you, we kind of got the easiest books possible to make the quota. Got to read four books. You know, you get a 10-page book with a page in each word, and you zip through it.
What's the proof that everyone read it?
I don't remember there being a lot of proof. I think we just had to write down that we read it. I remember oftentimes checking out a book about snakes. It had a lot of neat pictures. We'd look at the snakes and then say, yep, that's a book. Where's my pizza? Not a lot of words in that one.
Oh, that's hilarious.
But we did. One time we did get the pizza party. So that's always one of those days that starts out with high hopes and ends with tears, because inevitably the kids start screwing around, the teacher's had enough, and then there's punishment. Can never control it. You get pizza and some sort of carbonated beverage, and you can't control the kids.
Was there any sort of positive peer pressure to make sure everyone read their quota of books?
Sort of.
Or negative peer pressure.
It was more negative. Like, you better read that, you know. But some kids just didn't.
It'd be funny if a couple of kids didn't do it, and it's like, what did you even do with all your time?
Well, that's the thing. There was a couple of kids, admittedly, that were just so apathetic. You couldn't get them to do anything. Even things that you're like, but you should want to do this. Like, just be quiet so we can go to gym class. Mm-hmm. We all want to go to gym, play kickball. Teachers are like, if you can't be quiet, we're not going. We're going to sit. And it's like, be quiet, you know? And so everyone's quiet. I still remember the kid, too.
And then was he the dirtball?
He had some issues. And so everyone's quiet, and we're just about to go, and all of a sudden he's like, stop pushing me. You know, he like yells because somebody bumped him. And then like the teacher said, that's it. Everyone sit down. And we're sitting there. We had to study something, and we should have been playing kickball. And he's just like, why couldn't you have just been quiet? Just be quiet. I still to this day, I'm like, don't you want to play kickball?
It's just infuriating.
And he liked kickball. I don't know why he didn't. He just couldn't be quiet.
Just needs that attention.
I don't know what
probably
it was.
Probably lacking attention in his life.
Yeah, so those some of those memories just stick with you for a long, long time. I know who he is, too.
The kids should be afraid to do something like that. I mean, there has to be an enforcer in the class to deal with someone who's going to act out and ruin it for everybody else.
Yeah, that's true. Sometimes that pressure, you know, it's not great, but sometimes it is. It just teaches you life skills.
Yeah.
Like, there are times to just kind of be quiet or times to blend in, not draw attention to yourself, whatever. Yeah, that was a bad day for us.
We always joke about how my brother Micah should be the enforcer at Imperial Academy because he's just so big. But he's just way too nice to do anything like that. So
the friendly enforcer.
Yeah. He'd show up at the locker. So, did you do your homework last night?
Oh, yes, sir. Yeah. The Key of David program is coming up here in a little bit on KPCG. A couple episodes today, and make sure you listen for that. Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Stephen Fleury from Edstone, England. He's going through the autobiography of Herbert W. Armstrong, pulling a lot of really good lessons out of that, and some good history there and some good lessons for everyone today as well. So make sure you listen for that program. If you can't catch those live or replays, you can always find them online at kpcg.fm. That's where the archives are. You're listening to Trumpet Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG, and we are online at kpcg.fm. Live link at thetrumpet.com as well. You can also use the TuneIn app, which is a great place to listen if you're on the go. And we appreciate your comments. You can send those to comments at kpcg.fm, and we have a Twitter. What do you call it? We have a Twitter.
Account, yes.
There you go, at kpcgfm. I'm getting old, right? I'm like, what do you call it? Because, I mean, I wanted to say page because of Facebook. But I'm like, well, it's not a page, though. What is it? It's a Twitter handle? I mean, it's a...
That, too. That works.
Yeah. Well, I can't keep up with all the terms. All sorts of new things happening. There was a commercial years ago where they were, I guess, trying to highlight how things change so quickly. And you got to be, like, if you're an investor, you got to be on the ball with it. And there's a company and like all the kids were using one thing, and then they finally got up to speed with it and then said, oh, are you on such and such? And they're like, nobody's doing that. They're on something new. You can't keep up with it. It changes so fast.
Well, yeah, that just kind of reminds me of the iPhone and how every few months another one comes out.
There's always something new.
Can you believe it? It's only been in existence for 10 years. I didn't realize that. My dad mentioned that recently.
Yeah.
But only been 10 years, but they already have how many versions? Definitely more than 10.
Well, it's amazing because for those that are younger and have them, it's hard to imagine a time before it, right? I mean, it's hard to imagine or to think back to the time before the internet, but it existed. I remember it.
Right.
Yeah, but now everything is so much on the internet that, it's just a different world today. You imagine that lady we were talking about earlier, 114. She's probably still got a gramophone in her room or, you know, the old technology. But yeah, things do change quickly. And I don't know if it's a matter of people getting older, they just can't stay with it or they just don't care. Or if it's a combination of not caring about the latest, you know, greatest thing. Plus, you got all those years of information in your head. So I don't know which one that is. But
I think a little bit of it is just saying I like this form of technology and I don't necessarily care to get rid of it so fast. I mean, I feel that way about CDs. I don't have any music downloaded on my phone or anything like that. I just buy the CD if I want to listen to some music.
It's hard to find those.
Yeah.
They're going away.
Yeah.
There was a guy the other day I saw. I was at a coffee spot that is kind of known for hipsters. And this older guy came in, and he was an old guy, so he wasn't really a hipster, as they would call it. And I thought, well, that's interesting. And so, yeah, he ordered his thing, and he bellied up to the little coffee bar there and pulled out his flip phone, started doing stuff.
Yes.
And I thought, oh, okay, he's still a flip phoner.
So he is a hipster.
he's a retro. Everything's a retro. But I did see that I think Apple is thinking about bringing back a flip phone.
That would be awesome.
Like they have some new technology where you can fold up. More of a smartphone type thing. So I remember them being tiny, and then they got big, and then they got, I don't know, somewhere in the middle now.
Right.
That's all they're doing. I mean, I know they're updating like their iOS and stuff, but really it's just like, hey, it's big. No, it's small.
Well, they had that version that came out not too long ago where you can put your thumbprint in, I think. And the hard part about that is, what if it's really cold outside and the phone screen doesn't register your thumbprint? I mean, it's like you can only use it at certain times of the day.
Yeah, my new phone does that. It has a thumbprint.
Yeah.
It's got two layers
does
of security.
It work?
Pretty well.
Okay.
Like, it identifies my thumb, and then I've got to put in a PIN code.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then it needs a DNA sample. And then it has to process my
saliva.
You pluck
a hair.
Yeah. Yep. That's why I don't have as much hair. I had to pull it all out from my phone. It needed a sample. Yeah, it's so apparently it's locked down, even though it'll be hacked from all the apps that I have on it. But all the things that are going on in the world, of course, Syria continues to be just a disaster zone. And I find this very interesting just because I was watching the news last night. I think it was CBS. And, of course, the big news is about all of a sudden Russia's like the monster and they're hacking everything, even though they've been doing things like that for a long time, I think. But so that's the big talk now. And they're talking about Donald Trump having some relationship with Russia or something. And I don't know anything about it. I mean, there could be some validity to it. But how about what Russia is doing in Syria? And isn't that been on the current administration's watch? And yet no one seems to – they talk about what's happening there, but they don't talk about it in terms of tracing it back to the U.S. or in action there. So I find that interesting. But in any event, here we have Aleppo, and you've got a story about this. There's reports of executions as Syrian army closes in, and so the Syrian army has fought back against the rebels. They're taking over a lot of areas, and they're being pretty brutal in the process.
Right. It looks really bad from this story especially, but it just talks about how basically Syrian government forces went into people's homes yesterday and they executed 82 people, and nearly 20 of those were just helpless women and children. Probably a lot of the others were men who had nothing to do with the war and were just hiding out in their homes, and they still just went in and shot them. And I guess it's paying off for Syria though, because, or for the government, because now they're taking control of eastern Aleppo, which really they haven't held the entire 5-year civil war, which is interesting. 5 years, that's more than half of the time Mr. Obama has been the president. So really that whole conflict developed right under his nose, and he hasn't done anything about it except for say that there's a red line and then back off.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring up the red line. I think that's what a lot of people would think of. That's what I thought of, you know, saying, okay, here's this red line. If they use chemical weapons, we're going to take out that regime. What would have happened in the aftermath of that? I don't know, but that's what they said. Chemical weapons are used, kill a lot of people. There's video footage of it. Nothing's done. And now what do you have? Well, continued fighting. And Syria, the forces loyal to Bashar al-Assad, going in there and just killing people. I mean, and children, women, people that are not probably involved in the conflict at all. You know, so what would have happened if they had taken out the Assad regime? Don't know. You know, but nevertheless, this is what's happening now. And again, and Russia's very much propping up Assad.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone's talking about, you know, Russia hacking and doing things. They may be doing that. I don't know. But what about this? Doesn't this lead all the way back to the current administration? I think there's certainly some responsibility there.
Exactly. Executing 82 people door-to-door style. It sounds like a group of Vikings just plundering a village. We're back to, you know, Middle Ages type warfare where it's just barbarism. We've seen it from the other side, though, with ISIS that's also involved in the region. And then from a lot of what I've read, the rebels who we supposedly support are absolute savages as well in a lot of cases. So really we just have three extremely vicious groups over there fighting. And it seems like maybe we shouldn't be supporting any of them because they're all pretty sick and extreme. What we need to go in there ourselves because we can't really trust any of those groups.
Yeah, I think it's interesting too. Look at what's happening in Syria. And that should give us some perspective here in the U.S. Like we talked about earlier, there's people are still sitting around very comfortably and bemoaning colonialism and, you know, racism and different things and all upset. Well, what about Syria?
They probably don't even know what's happening there. They're probably that consumed in their own little world that they don't even realize what's happening in other parts of the world.
Yeah, I mean, you want to talk about discrimination, they're being killed door to door. So that's something we haven't seen in this country probably ever. I mean they had the Civil War, of course, but even that I don't think was this type of brutality, at least as far as I've read. So it is very interesting to see what's happening over there, and we just kind of continue on in our first world daydream, I guess.
Right.
They talk about first world problems and, you know, oh, you know, my coffee was cold this morning or, you know, things like that. And I think a lot of the rhetoric, particularly when you get into social issues, it's all first world problems. I mean, we're not facing this, right? I don't think you would sit over in Syria and have those kind of discussions today. They're just trying to survive. And we do have the power to do something about it, and that's what's always so interesting. I know we can't get involved in every little skirmish, but at the same time, We're always talking about injustices in this country and all that. And these people, if you're caught in the middle of these conflicts, you're just being absolutely butchered, whether it's Iraq, Syria, and we just sit here and discuss our first world issues. I think it's pretty hypocritical.
Right. And beyond that door-to-door execution, I believe they said it was yesterday, as far as we know, there's also a building full of 100 children trapped. Those children are all trapped in that building there in eastern Aleppo as well. There's even a girl who I believe is in that building who has tweeted a couple times, like, this is my last chance to either live or die. And even grown men who are hiding in their houses, possibly about to be executed themselves, are tweeting out, you know, come help us right now. Stop having your intellectual arguments about the situation and do something about it. Stop supporting these groups who we don't even know who they are, who really aren't being very effective. Obviously, the Syrian government, once they take control of Aleppo like they're doing right now, they're going to have control of all five major cities in the entire country. They're winning handily. Russia is backing that. And we're basically supposedly on the other side of it, but we're losing if that's the case because Russia's side has all five cities.
It's a bad situation over there. And we've seen similar things in Iraq with ISIS, and ISIS is involved there also in Syria along with all of these other groups. And that's always one of the difficulties when there's a uprising against the government. If the government wins, the pushback is pretty intense. But again, if the rebels win, their pushback is intense. So it's a bad situation any which way. Humanitarian groups are pleading for safe passage for the tens of thousands of civilians left in rebel-controlled pockets. So it would be frustrating if you were involved in, say, a humanitarian group and you see it happening and you can't stop it. You know, that girl that you mentioned, I think I saw a write-up on her or somebody in a similar situation. They said she's like the Anne Frank of Syria because, of course, you remember Anne Frank wrote her journal while she was hiding from the Nazis. And it's a similar situation. I mean, these are real people. And you know, they don't know if today or tomorrow or whenever is going to be their last day. We can't even imagine living like that.
Oh yeah, it's really tough to imagine bombs falling from the sky, soldiers' feet stomping through the streets, and you can just hear it right outside your door. And basically, they are waiting. They're at the complete and total mercy of basically three groups, especially the government right now. That's the most imminent threat to the civilians. But really, the rebels are a threat in certain areas. The ISIS is a threat in other parts. So, I mean, really, these people have no say in whether they live or die. That's something we can't even remotely relate to. And yet here, it's a pretty strong feeling that I get that a lot of our leaders don't even care about what's happening there. Even when the debates were going on, it just seemed like people were saying, the candidates were saying things about it because, oh, the American people expect us to say something about Syria, so therefore I'm going to mention maybe we'll conduct a couple of drone strikes or maybe have a couple flyover bombings, and that's about it. That, I mean, it's like we're so detached from the reality of what's happening there that we don't even care. That's what I got the sense of, at least from every single candidate who was running for president this year.
Yeah, I did. I got that same sense because they didn't address it much.
I just have to talk about it because people expect me to, but I don't really care that much.
And there were no solutions offered in any way, and now we're preoccupied with, did Russia hack something? Which again, maybe you need to look at. I don't know, but I think it's funny that they're all concerned about Russia. Communist Russia has invaded the universities in this country for decades.
Yeah,
and don't tell me now we're worried about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's like we're conveniently, the radical left is conveniently on their side when it comes to mental Russian takeover, but not when it comes to hacking. Apparently, they're also okay with physical Russian takeover based on what's happening in Syria. But it's like we can pick and choose areas where we like Russia or dislike them.
They wouldn't have cared two bits about it if Hillary Clinton had won.
Yeah,
they wouldn't be investigating.
Not at all.
And everybody knows that, I think. So anyway, we fiddle while the world burns.
Right.
On and on.
And apparently on Sunday, they had some sort of a meeting to try and arrange a short ceasefire so that humanitarian aid groups could rescue some of the children and get some of the people trapped in the city out, so at least the two sides can fight without there being people caught in the crossfire. And Russia wouldn't agree to a ceasefire even for a short time to rescue those innocent people.
It's very interesting. Difficult situation there in Syria. Some of the things going on today in this world. Thanks for being with us here on Trumpet Radio Live. Make sure you listen for the Key of David program and the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Those are coming up in a little bit. And enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow. For myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon, have a great rest of your day. 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.